This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, for more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And if you get a chance to rate our podcast on your provider, we'd appreciate you taking the time to do that. And now today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. It is February 15th, 2017. And this is all about above average investing for the average investor. Now, I'm here to help you make better money decisions. That's what I teach. That's what Justin and I teach here on the show. And our live listen line is always open. It's open right now. You can check in anytime you want. We're open all the time, but we're live right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. 888-99-CHART is our number. And there are various stages of life that each require a different strategy, right? Various stages of your life requires different strategies. When managing risk is most critical is in or nearing retirement, managing the risk. When you're young, you can just take all the risks you want because you have years and years and years to make it up. But when you get older and closer to retirement, you need to start thinking about it. There are many factors that can erode retirement savings, not just loss of value in your portfolio. Inflation, which runs historically at 3%. We haven't seen that in a number of years, but I have a feeling it's going to be rising toward that number. I think it's going to accelerate inflation, especially with the stimulus to the economy that the Trump administration is talking about. So current CDs and money market funds nearing 0% certainly going to lose, you're going to lose buying power with that money to inflation, meaning you can't buy what you used to buy. Okay, with the same amount of money. Then there's medical expenses. They're also rising. Have been forever, right? So that's going to continue. Don't expect that to stop. It's not going to stop. And then one thing that most people don't even think about, you're living longer. So the money that you are planning for retirement has to last longer. So, and if you're starting to think about retirement, take baby steps right now. You don't have to make massive changes. Just slowly migrate to a less risky stance. You know, maybe start off by buying some more, a heavier, big blue chip stocks that pay dividends. Maybe weight it toward that instead of those high risk, high growth stocks. You know, look for value instead of growth. And that's a good thing to do right now anyways in the environment we're in. And you know interest rates are going to go up. You know that, right? That means bonds are going to go down in value. They're going to be less attractive. So should you, be careful about getting into bonds. And you could diversify outside the equity and bond market. You could buy property, a rental property. Now, you'll have to deal with the hassle to manage it, but it's a pretty good income stream. And if you buy the right location, be very careful, because everything about property buying is location, 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 you will get appreciation along the way, besides that, income stream. So even though you might enter retirement, don't rush your portfolio into retirement. There's, modern thinking is that you stay more invested longer in the stocks. But you got to always consider that risk, the risk. And that's my cue to remind you to take our risk temperature, use our free online risk analysis tool to keep you help you understand just how much risk is right for your own mindset and temperament. Not how much risk there is, but what kind of risk you want to take. It's there free. It's really simple. Takes a few minutes. On investtalk.com. Now, do you have questions about the economy or the market? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART. We turn now to our 24-hour listen line. Let's go to the Q&A. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hey, guys. This is Josh from South Carolina, a longtime listener of you guys' podcast. I have a question today for you about rental property. My question is, as I'm looking to see what sort of cash flow you guys recommend in a rental property, being over here on the East Coast and where I'm at, I know the property values are nowhere near as high as they are out in California. However, wages aren't as high either. Just generally, if I've got a $1,000 rent that I'm trying to charge for a residential property and the payment I'm making at the bank for the loan is $800, So I guess net cash flow would be $200 a month. Is that good? Is there a certain percentage you guys look for when you're looking at rental property? Any information you could give me on this topic would be of great help. Thanks a lot. Love the show.
Well, before I sold all my rentals in 2004 or 5, I don't remember now, I always had a rule of always expect at least 1 month a year where there's no rent coming in for that property. So make sure that the cash flow positive at least covers that 1 month. In other words, if you're getting $1,000 rent and a payment's 800, that's going to give you, a $200 a month profit or $2,400. So it's plenty. It's plenty cushion. Now, you also got to figure out, does that $800 cost include property tax? The reason why you also want that 1 month is because when the person does move out, you're going to have to pay money to fix it up, clean it up, put new carpeting. So you always want to have a cushion. And my rule of thumb was have at least a positive cash flow to cover 1 month of no one being there. And I'd save that money, and if the renter stayed there 2 years, then I have 2 months, right? Because I'm saving it. I'm not spending it. I'm putting it aside to pay for whatever needs to be paid for. Anyways, I think that's always a good way. But there's lots of rules and recommendations, but that's one of my ones that I developed over years and years and years. So I hope that helps. 888-99-CHART. Don't geek out about small bore investment problems and give short shrift to the major ones. How to set your investment priorities. That's one of our talking points, our main talking point today. Also, I want to talk about stocks best run in 25 years. Well, you know we're having that right now. Best run of stocks in 25 years. Well, what do I mean? Well, we'll talk about it. That's one of the talking points. And bonds are being dumped. Is that going to continue and why? And finally, getting a mortgage in 2017. Getting a new mortgage or refinancing in 2017. What are some of the issues and some of the problems? Those are things I'm going to talk about today. What do you want to talk about? Did you see the retail sales numbers out this morning? The market was up. Dow was up 107, the Nasdaq up 37, and the S&P up 12. I sound like a broken record, huh? Day after day after day. Does that worry anybody? It kind of worries me, I guess. When something's too good for too long, I get nervous. Now, but I also remember history. And it could be too good for too long for years. Always remember, in our lifetime, your lifetime, in 1997 or 98, forget which one, when Greenspan said, the market is irrationally exuberant. This is, remember, he was the Federal Reserve at that time, calling the market irrationally exuberant. And then the market continued up sharply for two more years after he said that. So even the smartest people don't know. They just don't know. He's a smart guy. So don't worry about it yet. I mean, let me rephrase that. You can worry about it. Just stay invested. It's hard to know. You could hedge yourself, but not too big of a hedge. You know what I mean by that, I hope. You know what I mean? Protect yourself against the downside somewhat. Just a little bit, but not a lot, because the market's running. You want to run with it as much as you can, but just don't want to run over a cliff. That's all. I don't see a cliff coming yet. Not yet. We should have some correction. I would feel so much more comfortable if the market would correct. Let me rephrase that and make sure I'm clear. I would feel so much more comfortable with this bull rally move if the market would take a break, a breather, correct somewhat, and then continue on its run up. That would give it some more emphasis to go up higher. But when it doesn't ever rest, it builds more risk in the market. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. I'm here to talk about your money, not just investing either. Should I draw down savings or investments to repay my mortgage? Can I receive Social Security via my ex-spouse? 888-99-CHART is how to begin the conversation. You can do it right now. 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Gene in North Carolina. How you doing, Gene?
Hey, Steve, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yesterday, you spoke about the prospect of ETFs and ETNs, which may close
Yes.
or go out of business.
Yes.
And I guess the thing you mentioned, or you might have mentioned, was to sort of beware of particular funds that have low liquidity or trade
Yep.
very low in volume.
Yes.
Is there any other sort of symptom that you might have
Yes.
you seen that would give you a hint that a fund might do this?
Yes. Got a lot of yeses in there. Another thing to watch out for is the way they are tracking the underlying index or sector or group of stocks. If the ETF doesn't actually own the stocks that they're supposed to be tracking, like the index or the group of stocks, then that's a much higher risk than if they actually own the stocks that they're tracking. Now, you might ask, Gene, well, how can they not own the stocks or indexes or group sector? How can they not own
it
those?
Maybe a derivative.
Exactly. That is exactly what I'm talking about. A derivative of those things. You know, they
right.
could be using a derivative. Now, derivatives are always used when they try to do, they're leveraging 200, 300%. Those are all very high risk. But you can also have a single leverage, no leverage, but using derivatives to produce the same thing. And they might do that. There are ETFs that do that. So
one final question
yeah.
about this topic. So the actual mechanics of them closing out the fund, if you already bought shares in that particular fund, ETF, for example, and you're holding on to it, I assume that no one will give you any prior notice that they're closing it out, because everyone
no.
was rushing out the door and trying to sell it, right?
No, they will not tell you, no. You
and so one day you'll just find out that you've been automatically redeemed or
right.
all your shares have been sold and turned into cash. Is that
Correct.
What will happen?
That's exactly what will happen. That's
at
exactly
one
what will
particular
happen.
Day, the closing price, whatever it is at that day, that you'll just be closed out as if you actually sold it, you voluntarily sold it.
Okay, that's what you're hoping for, Gene. But it doesn't
less.
Have to be at the yesterday's closing price. It could be much less if there is a derivative or something that is not actually holding the stocks that represent whatever index sector or whatever they're following. So that's why you got to be careful of. Always.
So it sounds like the most dangerous thing to do is to be holding on to a fund that you're underwater that has low liquidity or you think may go out of business. One day you just may find out without you selling it that it's out of business.
That's right.
Hey,
now,
thanks a lot.
No problem, Gene. Appreciate the call.
Okay.
Many times the fund sponsor will make it good. So like if it's, you know, a big house like J.P. Morgan or Goldman Sachs, they'll make it good. They'll try to they may even switch you into another ETF of theirs that is similar and then tell you about it. That can happen too. So just be careful. I just want you to be aware of these things, because the more ETFs, exchange-traded funds, become popular, the more risk there will be. Just it's a natural consequence. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, every week. You can check in right now at 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. Let's go talk to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Steve. I was wondering if you can take a look at GDX, and do you still feel there's more room for the upside?
I do. GDX, everybody, is the Gold Miners Index, ETF, exchange-traded fund, seeking performance corresponding to the New York Stock Exchange ARCA Gold Miner Index. So it's the gold miners. If you feel gold is going to go up, then you would want to be in GDX or GLD if you just want to track gold itself. Now, why do I still think that has a run? Did you see the inflation news out this morning, Mike?
Yes, I did.
So inflation almost doubled, at least the CPI, the top line, from the month before, from 3/10 to 6/10%. That's good for gold. Now, what's bad for gold is the economy is getting stronger and the Fed is going to raise your interest rates. That's bad for gold. Why? Because it makes the dollar stronger. inflation makes the dollar weaker, and a rise in interest rates makes the dollar stronger. So you got the yin and yang of what's going on with the dollar. But I also feel that the rest of the world's economic malaise that's been going on for several number of years, I think this might be the year that they start to come out, meaning, Mike, their currencies will stop being so weak against our currency. Therefore, that might be good for gold, too. So I got two of the three things that, you know, the yin and yang of gold, and two of them are for a possible another run-up. And, Mike, that's just an educated guess on my part. I don't really know. But I do think it's...
Right, but as far as chart is concerned, do you see a possible resistance? I don't have a position yet. I want to get into it, but is there a possibility
Definitely.
Of a pullback?
Yes. It already made a pullback, okay? From about August on to the beginning of this year, it pulled back from a very strong beginning of last year. So it pulled back, and now it's making its run. It's right up against resistance right now. And the GDX, we're talking about $25 or so. It's at $24.93. That's resistance, 25. And then the next big resistance comes in about 31, 32. That's where I think it may have a lot of problems getting above that 31, 32 area.
Hey,
okay, Mike?
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. And everybody, I reserve the right to be wrong. I do, because no one really knows. When I'm reading a chart, it just tends to be true. And I'm reading the economy, I'm just sitting back trying to observe what's going on and what are the probabilities of XYZ happening. And I just gave you the probabilities, I think, of gold prices running up for at least one more time. Now, that's the probability. There are also possibilities, which are not nearly as comfortable for me. The possibility is gold could run up really strong. That's a possibility. The other possibility is it could collapse. But I think both those are pretty far-fetched. I think the probability is it's got one more run up. It's starting to run up. It tried to run up already. I mean, it's already made a good effort from 19 to 20, almost 25 in the last, since middle December? So, anyways, 888-99-CHART is our number. Love to talk to you. Let's talk about, do you know, you've heard about the food pyramid, right? Well, there's such a thing as a financial pyramid. And it's based on, there's an article I referred to on our website about this. And the pyramid is just based on some of the things you need to decide and some of your goals. And starting at the very bottom, what you have to do is set a goal. Have a goal. I want to save $1 million by the time I'm 50. Whatever the goal is. I want to have enough money to retire on that money will produce X. Whatever it is, you just need to set that goal. That's number one. And then you need to look, next part of the pyramid, how much you can save. That's up from the base of having a goal. How much you can save to achieve that goal. Then the next one is that you need to establish an asset allocation. After that, you need to understand your own behavior, and that goes to how much risk you're comfortable with. Okay, and again, that moving up in the pyramid, then being tax efficient with your investments. And then when you finally get down to it, the top of the pyramid is actually making your investment selection. You got to think about all these things. Start with a goal. Then figure out how much you can save. You physically can save because, remember, you got to achieve that goal. Then you got to figure out, well, how much am I going to put where? And understanding after that what your risk tolerance is and wherever you're going to put your assets. Then be tax efficient and then determine what your investment selection is going to be. Don't just say, I like this stock. I want to buy this stock. Well, everybody likes a stock. But does that fit into the achievement of the goal that you want? Oh, I want to make money. That's my goal. Everybody wants to make money. That's not a goal. Everybody has that. What is your personal goal? How much money do you want to save? How much money do you want to have by the time you retire? Okay, we're heading to part two of the program this Wednesday afternoon. Let's hear from you. Any money questions right now? 888-99-CHART. I appreciate 888-992-4278.
Our podcast continues next, but first, Steve and Justin are pretty excited about their new program being offered through KPP Financial. It's called Active 401k. Active 401k enables employees to make smarter choices in their employer's 401k plans. If you're frustrated by your 401k's performance and your limited time for research, Active 401k might be just the solution for you. It ranks your current options within your employer's plan, and then all you do is log on and make the changes. It tells you what to buy, what percentages, what funds, and so forth. This program will be offered by invitation to KPP clients and a limited number of InvestTalk listeners. It's called Active 401k, and if you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab, and then look for Active 401k. Now, let's continue with Invest Talk. You're listening to Invest Talk, a service of KPP Financial, for more than 20 years helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. Our Invest Talk Live listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Ray from Illinois. Very much enjoy your show and the information that you guys share every week. I had a question for you about Infosys Limited, symbol INFY. Looks like the stock has taken a beating over the last year or so, and there's some internal power struggles, according to the report. Just wondering what you thought about that stock, was considering it as a long-term buy. Appreciate to hear what you guys think. Thank you very much.
I think it's at a very good place to buy it. Infosystems, everybody. An Indian provider from India. Indian provider of software, reengineering, systems integrated, infrastructure management, and other IT services. It's a $34 billion company. It is a big company, big cap. They're going to make, they made 90 cents a share last year. In 2017, they're going to make 94. In 2018, they're going to make a dollar. So that's not huge growth. Is not going to be a huge grower. And the sales growth is between 6 and 10% per quarter. Okay, so that's the sales growth. And therefore, you're looking at a company, you're looking at, well, it's a blue chip company now. It's no longer a growth company. Don't look at it as a growth company. Okay, it pays a 2.3% dividend, which is not major. But what I do like about it is I think it's fairly priced or a little underpriced with a high return on equity of 23%. Management owns 13%, which is good. So it's a $14.86 stock, and it's going to make a dollar a share. So that's 14 point. So the 15 PE, right? And the five-year average PE is 11 to 22. So it's a little bit on the, you know, the cheap side. But if you look at a chart, it double bottomed right around 1350, 1375. Once in November and then again here in February. So I think that looks like a pretty strong bottom, and it's now 1486. So I kind of like it here. And I like it because it's big, it's fairly safe, and I think you'll be fine. Let's go to Raphael. Raphael in New Jersey. How you doing, Raphael? Or is it Raphael?
Hey, Steve. Yeah, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I wanted to kind of make a bear case for Gilead Sciences.
Okay.
I think you can do that. I was saying, you know, it's got all those problems. I think a lot of people are aware of a lot of their issues.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think you do have a bear case against Gilead. I can make that case too. It is cheap. It is cheap. And Gilead Sciences, everybody, develops therapeutics to treatment viral, fungal, respiratory, and cardiovascular diseases. And it's been on a lot of people's radar. And you got to really be careful when a stock goes down and it keeps going down and keeps going down and you think it's a really good value. There's what they would call value traps. And the reason why I'm not keen, on Gilead is because the sales have been falling and falling faster quarter over quarter over quarter for the last three quarters. The thing it had going for it was sales are always growing. Now they're not. They're shrinking and shrinking more. Now, if you look at Teva, one I've been kind of recommending, Raphael, versus Gilead, you look at that, and I remember I said the sales I've turned around. So I feel much more comfortable, even though that one went down and down and down and down and down and too. They went the same path. The only difference is the last three quarters, Teva sales started to go up. Gilead sales kept going down, and they're going down faster. So for me, it was, if you're going to, you know, for me, I stay away from Gilead and go buy Teva. Not that, I'm not supposed to say that, by the way. I just recommended a stock over the air, and I'm not supposed to, and we own that stock in our managed account. So the SEC is going to be very unhappy with me. I'm sorry about that. I won't do it again, I promise. But Gilead, yeah, I think you're right, Raphael. You can make the case for a bear continue to fall, even though it's cheap. It's cheap based on its earnings.
Actually, Steve, I didn't mean to twist you up. I was actually trying to make a bear. I'm sorry, I might have said the wrong word. I was trying to make a bull case for Gilead at this point.
You could do that. You could, because yeah, your case for a bull is cheap.
Yeah, it's definitely cheap, but also because it's falling so precipitously, mm-hmm. it's now north of a 3% dividend, and I mean they have like $30 billion in cash.
Yep.
So this could end up setting up to dump out a lot of weak holders, and then bam, comes in a big acquisition.
Yep. See, I could, and also it's a $91 billion company, Raphael. It's huge.
Yeah.
So you can make that case. I agree. You can make the case for either one. I'm just not comfortable owning Gilead. But if you want to roll the dice, this is where you'd roll the dice.
Yeah.
Had a nice update today.
I appreciate it, Steve.
Okay. Thanks, Raphael.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's one of those ones you can argue both sides. You could. For me, I just don't like the sales going down and accelerating. So it's hard for me to like it yet. Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. I'd like to ask about Varex company, ticker is VREX. I believe it was a spinoff company.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you thought maybe that might be an opportunity at this time to pick up some shares of that.
I would say no. Okay. Now, I try to, I don't know how long you've been listening to me, James, but I really try to make an mm-hmm. effort to give people straight answers and direct answers with the word yes and no. You know, a lot of people would say, this is a good thing. These are bad points. These are good points. Well, I like to give you an answer that, I want to hear. And that's yes or no. Don't give me this. Let me tell you why. Okay, and you're right. Varex Imaging Corporation manufactures and sells X-ray imaging components, panel detectors, and voltage connectors, which I think is a pretty decent business. It's a $1.1 billion company. So why am I saying no? Even the sales in the most recent quarter were up 8%, whereas they were shrinking the quarters before that. So from that point of view, and it's going to make $1.77 in 2018 after making $1. It's always made money. So why don't I like it? Why am I saying no? Well, the main reason, James, is because it is a spinoff, and we don't have enough length of time for me to do a proper analysis of the company. I don't know, it hasn't been around long enough as a standalone entity for me to be comfortable. And all IPOs and spinoffs within the first 6 months, I don't recommend them. I don't think you should get involved because it's too risky. There's a lot of risk. Now, I can tell you this, the company looks pretty reasonable price. It does. But it's simply because it's so new, James, that I'm not comfortable with it, okay? And that might be a personal prejudice of my own, by the way. But I appreciate the call. Thanks, James. 888-99-CHART. Okay, stocks have had the best run in 25 years. What does that mean? Well, it has five straight up days for all three major indexes, the Dow, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ. All three indexes, 5 days in a row, making new highs. making new highs 5 days in a row for all three. The Dow's at 20,611, the S&P at 2,349, and the Nasdaq at 5,819. Now, so the last time they did this was January 2nd, 1992. And in fact, it did it January 3rd, too, 1992. So it was 6 days in a row. But it hasn't done 5 days in a row since then. So now if it does it again tomorrow, we'll still have the same record of 6 days in a row. If it does 7 days in a row, then it's brand new. Okay, now if you remember right, the January 2nd, 1992, remember the crash in 1987? Okay, I know I'm old, but you know, this history gives me context, and it will happen to you too as you get old. I still have the Wall Street Journal newspaper sitting right in front of me, a little dusty, and this paper was issued October 20th, 1987, when the Dow fell 20% in one day. So there was a recovery. If you would have bought the very next day after that, you would have made a fortune because that started a bull market. And try to remember that 1992, the bull market, from 1987 to 1992, 5 years, the bull market continued for another 5 years at least. Don't think it just ends. Now, what's the major difference between the record we're setting today and the record we set in 1992? This is the major difference. In 1992, the stock market was still pretty much had some really good valuations still. The valuations were still very reasonable. Today, we're sitting at like the top 10th percentile of highest valuations based on a lot of different factors. So the market is much more valued today than it was back then. And just so you know, on January 3rd, 1992, after that, they had a pretty nice, decent correction. I'm hoping for one now, too. Let's go to Tusher in New Jersey. How you doing? Want to talk about NVIDIA. How you doing, Tusher?
Hi, Steve. I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, I listen to the podcast almost every day while I commute to home from my work, and I must say it's really educational. I'm really enjoying and loving it. Thanks for all the work you do for us.
Thank you. Appreciate the nice words.
Thanks a lot. I would like to know about NVIDIA.
Okay.
I just saw that the stock went down yesterday, mm-hmm. and it also was swinging between 109 and 110.
Yes.
So I would appreciate if you could give some insight on that.
Okay. NVIDIA Corporation, headquartered in Santa Clara, where Silicon Valley is, heart of Silicon Valley, designs graphic processing units used in personal computers, workstations, game consoles, and mobile devices. It's a $59 billion company, so it's a very large company. Earnings are going to go down 9% in 2018, their fiscal 2018, which is this year, and then up 21% in 2019. Sales are increasing dramatically, up 55% the most recent quarter, up 54% the quarter before that, up 24% before that, up 13% before that, up 12%. So a consistent sales growth, and that's why you got this stock going from, what was it a year ago, a little below 30 to now 109 in a year. So now, Tusher, you got to be really careful because it's made a huge run based on the good news and high growth in sales. And the PEs now, you're looking at, you know, a 30 PE. And the 5-year average is 10 to 49. So it's up there pretty high in the PE. A great company. So if you want to buy it, is that what you want to do, Tricia? You want to buy some?
Yeah. I already bought it a couple of weeks back.
Okay.
And now I'm thinking, should I hold it or should I sell it back?
Oh, you probably should hold on to it. I think it's got more legs. I think you might get a pullback, though. But you would buy that pullback, Tusher, not sell it.
Okay.
Yeah. NVIDIA.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. NVDA. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. Hi, Art. How you doing?
Good, Steve. I just wanted to ask you a question about a percentage as far as like when you hedge.
Yeah.
I've got about 14% in my hedge against the market going down.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering if that's too much or...
No.
Not enough?
No, it's not too much. Art, you can bump that up to maybe 20. even up to 25 as the market keeps moving up, slowly bump it up because it's getting more and more of value. But don't jump a bump up. Just take your time, you know, maybe do a little bit more here shortly. When was the last time you put on the hedge?
Well, I've been doing it occasionally, like over the last 3 months, I believe. I've been adding a little bit at a time.
That's smart.
Adding a little bit more.
There's nothing wrong with that, Art. Nothing wrong with that at all. Did you still hold on to your longs? So you still held on to longs, right? You still invested.
Yeah, I still have longs, but just a hedge. I'm in a position.
Same thing we're doing in one of our managed accounts. We are doing the same thing in one of them.
Three ETFs that I'm involved in that if the market were to take a hit, then I think those would do pretty well.
Yep. Same thing we're doing with ETFs, too. So
let's wait. 20% is not much.
20-25 is where I'm comfortable with. I have to watch the market. If the market does some really crazy stuff, you know, and goes up 1,000 points in a day, I'd add more to the short side. Yeah. Okay. Appreciate the call, Art. Thank you very much. Let's go to Steve in Oakland. How you doing, Steve? Oh, you want to talk about Geo? I was supposed to talk about yesterday.
I have a question. I have invested in GEO. It's a prison REIT.
Yep.
It's like a quarter of my portfolio. I've been adding to it, and I'm actually up 46%. And I'm really nervous now because it's a big chunk of my portfolio, and I'm up so much at 46%. Steve, I'm just wondering, should I just close my position? Because I don't know what's going to happen over the next few months with the immigration issue and prisons and what Trump's going to do. What would you do if you were in my shoes?
I would cut it back. I wouldn't close the position though. I'd cut it back because it's just too heavy. And I eventually get it back down to maybe no more than, what'd you say you were? I wouldn't want to be more than 10%. You're at 25, right?
Yeah, 25.
Yeah, no more than 10%. Don't let it, and then if it keeps going up on you, keep cutting it back. But don't necessarily get out because this is what you're doing. There's an old saying, Steve, don't trim your flowers and water your weeds. Okay.
Don't. I heard it.
So that old saying means people like to keep the stocks that are doing terrible. They don't want to sell them. When really they should sell those, and then they want to sell the winners because they're winning. Well, there's an argument to cut back, but don't just get out. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks. That Geo, everybody. Geo Group is that REIT that owns prisons, and ever since Trump got in, it's been moving up. 888-99-CHART is our number. Give me a call.
Good afternoon, Steve and Justin. This is Jared. I'm a podcast listener from Victorville. I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts on Cracker Barrel, ticker symbol Charlie Bravo Romeo Lima. I like it as a long-term growth play, holding for a minimum of 5 years. Pick a good solid dividend. That seems to be growing nicely. Just want to hear your thoughts on where you might pick it up, if at all. Your advice is always appreciated. Thank you.
Cracker Barrel, it operates 640 full-service Cracker Barrel restaurants in 43 states with plans to open 7 to 8 in this year. 7 to 8 more. I've only been there once, so I can't really make a comment of the food. I don't know. And if I was going to invest in any restaurants, I'd definitely like to go there and see what the buzz is about. Like when I go, I've been to Cheesecake Factory several times, and I think, it's still very popular and busy. It yields 2.8%. It's almost $4 billion company, so a pretty decent size. Sales growth is pretty slow in the very low single digits, 1 to 4% sales growth. I think it's too expensive, and I wouldn't buy it here. PE ratio, 5-year range, 13 to 26, and it's sitting at about 29. It's $166 stock, going to make $8.94. Sales are going up. Earnings are going up 8 to 10%, even though sales are going up much slower. It's just that I think it's too expensive. I wouldn't buy it here. It would have to go back down to about 130, the low 130s, which has been there twice in the last year, before I would be interested in picking it up. It's the high was 172 in December, and it's 166 now. So I think you're too late to the party here, and I would not buy it here. It's just too expensive. Good company, great return on equity, nothing wrong with the company. It's just expensive. That's all. And I don't like to buy expensive. Okay? Bonds are being dumped. Have you seen that? Well, the reason being is the CPI number, Consumer Price Index, came in as inflation. This is an inflation gauge at the consumer level. Was up 0.6%. It was up 0.3% and that was for January. In December, so it almost doubled on the top line. Retail sales were up 0.4%. If you take out gasoline and cars, it was up almost twice that. And last month, the December report, they increased it to 1% up. So the kind of inflationary. Now, the core CPI was up 0.3%. It was up 0.2% the month before. Now, this kind of tails in. Now, remember, we got these numbers this morning. This kind of tails into, was it this morning or yesterday morning? Kind of tells in what the Fed said, you know, what Janet Reno is saying about interest rates and at the next meeting in March. They have these numbers before we do. And so they're kind of saying, well, we're going to have to push interest rates up. Well, they probably are. And I wouldn't be surprised if they don't do it in March. They wouldn't surprise me if they didn't do it as well. You know, they might want to wait to see a few more months' data. But by mid-year, interest rates are going up. Another quarter point at least. So that's what we had out. You know, the economic numbers have been just looking better, a little bit better and a little bit better. Nothing dramatic, but the retail sales were a bit dramatic and the inflation numbers were a bit dramatic. So that's the first dramatic numbers we've seen. Not shockingly dramatic. Don't get me wrong. Don't misunderstand where I am there. Also, getting a mortgage in 2017 is going to be a little bit more difficult because interest rates are going up. 30-year fixed mortgage is above 4% right now. Refinancing is dying because everybody's already done it. Cash out to pay more expensive bills is okay. So if you try to refinance your house and you're taking cash out, make sure you use the money to pay down bills, not to go play with that money. You need to build equity into your house. That doesn't mean you take cash out of it just because you want to, you know, play. It means you take cash out of it to pay higher credit card debt, which you shouldn't take on anyways, and other kinds of debt. You also can refinance to rid yourself of the PMI, which is always a good thing because that's expensive. And what you can do is save that PMI and invest that money. In other words, don't just spend it because you don't have to pay it anymore. Act like you still have to pay it, but pay it to yourself in the form of investment. Our time is up for the hour, everybody. If you'd like to contact me directly with a personal message, just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And on behalf of Justin Klein and everybody else at KPP, thanks for being with us today, and let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.